It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Mike Florio with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Time to talk some football with Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. He is at Pro Football Talk on Twitter. He is on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Sports Illinois. Download the Circa Sports app today, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Mike, we learned a little something on Instagram recently that you and Caleb Williams have a Lego hobby in common. He seems to be really into it. He was showing off his Heisman Trophy was in between the Avengers Tower and the Disney castle that had, like, Beauty and the Beast in it and everything.
Well, at least he actually makes his. I'm still stuck on this typewriter to the point where I've forgotten where I put the extra bags, which is not a good sign for ever getting it done. And George Kittle on the Receiver Show this summer, he gets a lot of the sets. They just put the boxes in a closet, and he never actually builds them.
There's some sort of character metaphor there with George Kittle.
That's not a hobby. Buying things and putting them in a closet is technically not a hobby.
Well, it is. It's called hoarding.
Yeah, hoarding. Yeah.
Collecting. I'll defend him on that one. But what you're saying is George Kittle has your Lego parts?
He might. I need to check to see if his closet has my typewriter box with all the bags in it.
At least you know where to go. Okay, so I know you haven't, I know that you may have not caught up yet on the last episode of Hard Knocks, but for those who don't know, what do you think the likelihood was of a team trading somewhere between a 4th and 6th, 7th round pick for Velus Jones Jr.? If you had to just handicap that part of it, what would you say?
When you consider how tightly the Bears controlled this season of Hard Knocks, the only reasonable conclusion is they want to trade him. They put that in there to try to spark a market to the extent that there might not be one, in the hopes that they can make something happen. Because otherwise, that would have ended up on the cutting room floor with all the profanity and anything else that they didn't want to be part of the show. So when a team exercises that much control, anything that gets in, we have to look at it and say, they wanted that out there. Why did they want it out there?
I think it's interesting, too, like when we look at this, like the mosaic of what this Hard Knocks experience was for the Bears. I wonder if we'll find out that they softened, because the episodes got better as the 5 weeks went along. And the first two were so bad that I wonder if they heard it from, whether it was the folks at HBO and Max or other people around the league being like, guys, I know that you didn't want to do this, but it really feels like you don't want to do this.
Yeah, it does get to a point where it's worthless. And that was my take on the first two episodes. It was completely and totally worthless. And there very easily could be political maneuverings where the people from Max and NFL Films go to someone with the league and say, would you please tell George McCaskey to allow us to make this at least moderately interesting, that they're are things we can include that won't embarrass anyone and that won't give away any secrets. And you know, maybe we should include a shucks or a darn or a heck in there somewhere to just make it somewhat realistic.
That's how I felt about it just watching. But then again, I worried that I was too close to it. Was that some of the sentiment outside of Chicago, was that it was not that entertaining and very sterilized?
When the best line, which in hindsight I'm surprised it made it in, was Tyson Bagent talking to the backup quarterback they cut, Brett Rypien, about who he shares a birthday with. And Rypien says O.J. Simpson and Tom Hanks, and Bagent says, you should always say it in that order. That's a pretty low bar for how entertaining the episode is. Although that was a pretty good line, that's the only thing that stood out.
Mike, have you heard any, what are you hearing about Brazil? What's real and what's imagined about the NFL's experience down there?
Well, look, the NFL is trying to export its product so that the virus that we have all been infected by for decades will ultimately spread into these other countries. And it's a long-term plan, like a 100-year plan. And more countries get games. It creates, in theory, more consumers, more excitement. It's a finite product. You can't, well, they're going to try to increase the inventory. But if you can increase the consumer base, you make a hell of a lot more money, which is what they're trying to do. And I hope the people in Brazil realize the quality of the game they're getting. I mean, we have been sending turd after turd, pardon me, to London for the past 17 years. They're getting one of the best games of the season right out of the gates for the first time ever in Brazil. So I hope that the people there appreciate it. I know that some Eagles players aren't thrilled about going. I haven't heard much chatter from the Packers. It makes me wonder whether or not the Packers are going to be more prepared for this and more willing and more all in than some of the Eagle players will be.
Have you heard anything about reporters being angry too? Because there's a thing going on with X in Brazil as well.
Well, if X is still banned, and as of last Friday it was, and I've kind of lost track of it because things have gotten hectic since then, but if you can't post on X, unless you use a VPN and risk a $9,000 a day fine, it's not going to be the same real-time experience for the reporters, for fans, for anyone who hopes to post real-time observations, photos, video from the game. And it puts, I think, more weight on, you know, what, and this isn't an ad for Peacock, but you got to watch the game on Peacock because you're not going to be able to scroll through social media and see what's going on.
Mike, I've realized that I've read more thought pieces about Tom Brady's broadcasting than I've read about what Tom Brady's actual thoughts on football are. My concern is that we're getting into a metaverse here almost, where we're going to be watching a football game, but watching Tom Brady watch a football game. I don't know that I have the bandwidth to do that, so I will leave it to experts like you to do things like that. But it just seems like his own work is going to be as hyper-focused as the cameras are in the game.
They've welcomed that. When the schedule was announced in May, the first game he's going to work, he got top billing over the two teams, the Cowboys and the Browns. And I was watching one of the Fox college games, and when they came back from break and they're doing their internal pitch for their other shows that they want you to watch, Gus Johnson says, history is going to be made when Tom Brady calls his first game. It's like, give me a break. It's about the game. It's not about the broadcaster. And that's the part of it that I don't really like. And you throw in this wrinkle where the NFL is dramatically reducing his access because he's trying to buy a piece of the Raiders. I wonder how all that plays out. And I think what the NFL did is a message to Tom Brady that whenever it's time to vote on him officially acquiring a piece of the Raiders, there's a pretty good chance at least nine of them are going to say no. Because do you really think Tom Brady's not going to get what he needs? Do you really think he's not going to communicate with people that he's not supposed to communicate with? I mean, in all seriousness, he's going to call people that in theory he's not supposed to be talking to, and he's going to get what he needs so he can do the broadcast in a positive way. And I think they're trying to get him to pick a lane here. He might not do it, and they might ultimately have to just say no when it's time for that ownership bid to be voted on by the 32 owners.
I just think it's going to boomerang on him. I really do. If they're trying to make it about watching Tom Brady, and we're tuning in, if he's good at his job, we won't necessarily notice him. If he's good, we're not going to say, hey, what was that with Brady? Don't get out of my way. Tell me what's going on. Make me smarter. Don't make me dumber. And help me understand if you have a good story to tell. But you know what the job is. But I think it's unfair to him then to say, hey, you can't just concentrate on learning to do something you've never done before, that you have to be, you yourself have to be appointment television. That's a recipe for disaster.
And he's going to struggle with being critical of players. And I think he's trying to stake out a sweet spot where he doesn't criticize players directly. He criticizes, and this was a quote that he offered up recently that I still don't understand what he was saying, but basically criticizes the coaching of today's quarterbacks. There isn't the same focus on understanding the nuances of a system, and it puts these guys in a tough spot because he understands that if he starts calling guys out and saying that guy sucks or this guy sucks, he's going to have a lot of people who are upset with him. So that's where he's going to have to suppress his feelings. And he said years ago when he got Sportsman of the Year, 2020, he told Sports Illustrated, I envision retiring and watching games and saying these guys suck. I can play better than them right now. It would be a great broadcast if he would say it. There's no way he's going to say that.
That just sounds like everybody who listens to our station. I don't know how that's any different. And I say that lovingly. I also think that I want Gus Johnson to announce my Tuesday just to make it more interesting. Just my two cents on it. But I will ask you this, Mike, switching gears and talking about a story that I think deserves some real attention on your site right now. Stefon Diggs talking about last season and how he said that was the worst mental space of his NFL career. What were your takeaways from this?
It doesn't surprise me because when the Bills had their mandatory minicamp last year, Coach Sean McDermott made a comment that suggested very strongly that Stephon Diggs was there and that he essentially stormed out and they were concerned that he was no longer there. Well, the truth was there was some sort of an argument and they told him to leave, which is a very different vibe. The whole thing seemed dysfunctional. I thought they should just trade him then and there. The cap result ended up being the same because they traded him this year before June 1. If they would have traded him last year after June 1, it would have been the same outcome under the cap. They should have just done it. He had 620 receiving yards the first six games and then kind of fell off the map. And you just wonder what the truth is behind the scenes. And he's very careful to say he'll never talk about the specifics with the Bills or with the Vikings. He suggested he wanted things to shake out the way they did. He tweeted his way out of Minnesota the same day Kirk Cousins got his first extension with the Vikings. So he has done a good job of engineering his career. The problem is when you do it twice, and I think Tyreek Hill is very sensitive to this. He wants to stay in Miami because when you get traded that second time, that's when people start looking at the player, not the team. And now that that's happened to Stephon Diggs, you know, there's a truth that we'll probably never hear, but the reality is a lot of people are looking at him and wondering how much of the problem he was both in Minnesota and in Buffalo.
Is anyone in a better position from a negotiating standpoint than Dak Prescott right now?
Oh, it's perfect. And, you know, the best deals I've ever done, specifically when I buy a car, is when I get myself to the point where I no longer want the car. Once I convince myself and the salesperson I no longer want the car, all of a sudden I get the deal I was looking for. And the problem is, I got to talk myself back into the car again because I legitimately got to the point where I didn't want the car. And I feel like that's where Dak is getting. Seriously, that's happened.
That sounds like a Curb Your Enthusiasm bit where it's like,
true.
You know what I mean? Like you walk in, it's like you hand the fantasy of handing the guy your business card. It's like, I want this car for this price. If you can do this price, call me. And you walk out and then you're like, yeah, I don't think I really want that car. And then the guy calls you and says, yes, deal.
Yeah. And I feel like Dak is there. I feel like Dak accepts the fact that he's going to become a free agent, that someone is going to offer him significantly more than the Cowboys, and he's going to change teams. And I think at one level, the Cowboys love it because the Cowboys love it when people are talking about the Cowboys. But this could be biggest free agent since Reggie White. Now, Tom Brady, yes, and Peyton Manning, yes, but they were both older and Manning was damaged goods. This is guy still in his prime, hitting free agency with no way for the Cowboys to stop it from happening. And all it takes is one team. I was talking to somebody about this the other day. you can say we're not doing it. Okay, 31 teams can say we're not doing it. All it takes is one team to say, you know what, we got to spend this money anyway. Let's go get Dak Prescott. It makes us relevant. We sell tickets. We'll get more primetime games. Who cares if we win a Super Bowl? This is about making money. There's going to be – I mean, there was one team that gave Deshaun Watson that horrible five-year fully guaranteed contract. People are talking $60 million a year for Dak. Would it be crazy if someone paid him 65 or 70? I don't think it would be crazy because there are teams out there that are desperate to find a quarterback who will make them relevant. And Dak, he might not win a Super Bowl, but he'll make you relevant. And all the irrelevant teams would love to be relevant.
Mike, there was a joke in Dallas that if Jerry could somehow draft Kenny Chesney, he would, because he knew it would sell out the stadium every week.
Hey, it's true. Look, I've figured out Jerry this year. I don't think that he really wants to win Super Bowls the way that he claims. I think he knows that's part of the grift. He's a carnival barker, and he knows there's a sucker born every minute, and he's trying to fill his stadium with them. As long as the stadium's full and they're buying overpriced popcorn and beer and everything else, and they're getting their six or seven primetime games and they're still America's team, that's what matters to him, I think, more than anything else. His testimony from the Sunday Ticket trial really crystallized that for me. He understands this is about being interesting. And you can't control how good you are, but you can control how interesting you are. And he thrives and relishes every opportunity for his team to be interesting. And look at what he's done. They haven't been to an NFC championship for 29 years. And his team is still the one that every network clamors to put on the air. NBC would put the Cowboys on every week if they could. And I'm sure every other network feels the same way.
While we're talking about cars, you still have the Alfa Romeo?
No, that was the first one that I convinced myself I didn't want to buy. And I traded it for an Audi RS7 3 years ago. And I got the deal I wanted after I convinced myself I didn't want to buy it.
Now, you don't own a boat, do you?
No, God, no.
Okay. All right.
You think a man who could talk himself out of a car owns the most inefficient vehicle in the world?
That was going to be sort of a defining data point for me, because boat ownership is like the ultimate, I want to do this, I don't want to do this, I want to do this, fine, I did.
When does Mike have time to be on a boat?
What's the old line, like the second happiest day in a person's life is when they buy a boat and the happiest day is when they sell it?
Correct.
Yep. That's fine.
That sounds about right. Mike, you're the best. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
That's Mike. Thanks, Florio. Mike. Next up should...
Mike doesn't even have time to do Lego. You think he's got time to be on a boat?
I love the idea of George Kittle being the Lego repository and Florio having to get Legos from George Kittle. Also, Twitch rejoiced because they finally got an update on the typewriter.
And you know people who own boats, they don't own them necessarily because they've actually set aside time to use them. There are whole tiers, Mike Sando, of boat ownership and usage. There are some people who own boats and use them all the time. Some people own boats and never use them. And then there's the in-between people, about those who say, hey, you want to take the boat out, and they never leave the harbor.
Does Mike Florio strike you as the type of person that would even own a boat?
That's what I was trying to find. Maybe.
No.
I don't know.
Okay.
There's a maybe in there.
He is.
I'm not saying it's like in Texas.
He is too fiscally responsible.
You don't think he's got the giant Trump flags waving behind him?
I really don't think that. But
I know that. But, you know, there's places you can use a boat in West Virginia, I think.
I have learned that they're all kind of different here. Like, here you have to put them in warehouses and such. But where I come from, you don't. They're just there. You winterize your boat, but they stay there because the water doesn't freeze. It's all kind of different.
But salt water is completely different than Lake Michigan, because you know what the worst thing is for a boat? Salt water.
Yeah, but in Texas, most of them are on lakes that are just rivers that got dammed up, you know?
Yeah, reservoirs.
Yeah, it's a totally different discussion.
Those are the ones with the giant flags. Yes.
Not necessarily.
You know those well. When we return...
I've been on a boat. It did not have giant flags.
Weren't you recently on a boat?
Yeah, Dan, that's the point.
Okay,
There's more people out there than you think there are.
But you weren't in Texas.
Still wouldn't have happened there.
They're in the harbor here.
No, I'm not saying they wouldn't. I think you're being glib on purpose.
walk around the harbor sometime.
I'm not saying they don't exist.
There's actually, there are two slips in DuSable where there's one boat with massive LGBTQ like stickers and flags and rainbow, yes, rainbow everything. And the slip next to it is all red Trump 2024, don't tread on me. So I always wonder what those conversations are between those boat owners as they're heading out for their Sunday afternoon on the lake.
It's not even like you don't necessarily see people that you have a boat next to.
Yeah, there's a lot of harbor barbecuing and grilling here. There's a whole harbor culture here.
Yeah, but you're making it very one or zero, and I'm telling you it's just not that way. Not even in Texas.
When we return, I think the Cubs might be done because these last 2 days have not been great for the old playoff chances.
At all.
Should we do the math?
Cubs math next.
A little bit.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Yeah.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Matt Bowen.
I was listening to you guys on the radio one afternoon.
You should be. Everybody should.
Cubs down to their last out. They trail by five. Here's the pitch. Talkman swings and hits a pop fly shallow left. Reynolds under it and makes the catch. And Pittsburgh wins again as the Pirates take the first two games of this series, winning tonight by a final of 5-0.
Another loss for the Cubs makes things pretty much out of reach here. It's all I always preface anytime I'm scribbling numbers that I could be wrong and I could stand corrected, but this is my back of the envelope math.
You got 25 games left.
The Cubs are 71-68, which means they played 123, right?
Oh, yes, 23.
They have 23 games left. I counted like
23
seven
games
yesterday.
Left, 4.5 games back of two teams.
But I'm only worried about the team that's further away, and that's the Braves. The Braves are 75-63. They have 24 games left. So
they had a game in hand on you.
If the Cubs have to have more wins than the Braves, the Cubs have to have a better record. They cannot tie. So this is what it looks like to me. If the Braves
if they tie.
If the Braves go 14-10 over their final 24, which I think is pretty likely, that is their current pace. If they go 14-10, they finish 89-73. The Cubs would have to go 19-4.
That's not happening.
Right.
They play the Dodgers and the Yankees in the next series.
That's Layla, and that's why, like, when we were together when Dan was down in New Orleans and we were talking about folks saying, well, the Cubs schedule, it's so easy. And I was like, wait a minute.
Not.
I was like, no, it's not.
That's the fallacy. Like, they did what they were supposed to do on the road trip. They go 8-1. We're all happy. Everything's great. The playoff chances are up to what, like 6-some-odd%? And then everything's peachy keen until that eighth inning against Pittsburgh on Monday. And that's when we got quickly brought back to reality, and oh, by the way, we don't know if Justin Steele will pitch for the rest of the season.
Yeah, the Pirates series this year is the equivalent of the Rockies series last year.
But here, yes.
Where you go, oh, well, that's the end. Like, the team that you have to beat and you should beat, you don't beat at the worst possible time.
I was thinking about that a lot last night, actually, because, you know, my sports thoughts, just me and my sports thoughts, you know, that's
what
I have.
That should be your podcast.
Me and my sports thoughts.
That's me and my sports thoughts.
Yeah, it was kind of like that, actually.
It's actually my feeling of and me.
Yes, it is. But, you know, it's a...
Womp, womp, womp.
So the one before the other is just illustrating... Sometimes you mess up syntax purposefully, so that way you can use it for emphasis. That's a tool people use. So anyway, point being that I don't think they're the same. This September, you cannot say the team is as successful as they were last year. Because at this point on the calendar last season, they had just beaten the Giants and had a 90%+ chance of making the playoffs. You cannot say that about this team.
Well, Jed likes to think about portions of seasons as laudable for their success. And that's fine, but only if the entire season is successful.
Right. You can't look at last year and go, well, you know, there was that stretch where we were 50-36. Awesome. Then what happened?
Right. There's been a great stretch this year.
Tell me the rest of that story. I would love to know how that story ends. How did it end, Jed?
Bad.
Well, we went to Colorado and things went really bad there. And then Arizona came to town and things went really bad. Then we went to Arizona and things got even worse. Did you make the playoffs? No.
No, no. Did you fire your manager?
Yes. Yeah,
sure did.
And thinking
and promised of better days.
And frankly, what was the expectation for the wins above replacement of that manager? Because as we maintained in the offseason, they didn't do enough. And why I was saying there was symmetry with Justin Steele's injury at the beginning of the season and Justin Steele's injury now, even though they're different body parts, is that you didn't have enough to withstand it.
I feel awful for the clubhouse, even though I know that this is mostly their fault. Guys didn't play well early on in the season.
The highest paid guys.
Yeah, then the light clicks on, and then you'll look up at the end of the year and see that Dansby Swanson is a 3.8 war and Ian Happ is a 4 war. You go, man, this team sure looked a lot better in retrospect than it did live. But the problem still is and will be that they don't have a 6 war player. And maybe they're growing more.
Or they don't have enough 5-war players, career 5-war, not just like you had one year, although that's awesome.
Maybe they're growing one. Maybe Pete Crow Armstrong turns into that. Because what he's done over these last 6 weeks of baseball has been really incredible.
It is like, not off the table. Like him being a star is not off the table.
But here's what I would say. Don't bet on that.
Right. Oh,
go spend money on guys that have actually been big-time players.
Well, that's, I mean...
And hope that you're right, and that it all
cheap.
Just...
You have him under contract control. Now is that we use all that extra money to go say, well, I know we have this, but here comes this mamma jam in the middle of the lineup. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, prospective depth is how you turn into the Dodgers, where, you know, you can unload some people for... next to nothing if you just say you like Tommy Edman. I'm still bitter. I'm still bitter about that trade. Point being, though, zoom out, right? And the problem with water finding its level, the problem with people playing to the back of their baseball card is this season is your illustration. Yes, that may happen, but it didn't happen when you needed it to. The variance hit at times that were a problem. So how are you controlling for that part of it? Because the goal is to win and make the playoffs.
Ideally, you would control by getting better players.
I mean, that's it. You can't have it be a small collection of talent. And a lot of these players, you know, they get a lot more money, I think, off of the books for them because of who they're still paying right now. Like, if you look at who is still on payroll, you'd be surprised at some of the names. And those guys probably come off the books next year, but it's still a difficult line to try to tightrope here.
Speaking of payroll, I mean, this is not Cubs, but I think that you guys will find it interesting. So, you know, my brother is not really into sports, but he loves like business stuff inside of sports. So we were having a conversation a few weeks ago where I was talking, because it was Bobby Bonilla Day, and we were having the discussion about players that are still like under contract and had all of this deferred money. And so I told him, I said, hey, I got something that'll help illustrate it. These are some of the names that are still making money. And this is just a fun, like, go back down memory lane. Chris Davis with a C. Okay.
Oh,
still
man.
Getting paid.
Still getting paid $9.166 million. Alex, by the Orioles, Alex Cobb still getting paid through 20. I'm sorry. And Chris Davis is getting paid through 2037. Okay.
2037.
And he's getting $9 million a year, yes. 9.2 a year through 2037.
Yeah, but it's not worth what it was when he could have gotten it back then.
I understand.
Later money is not as valuable.
Alex Cobb, $4.75 million through next season. Bobby Bonilla on the list twice, once with the Orioles and once with the Mets for a combined $1.7 million. With the Orioles, it's through 2028, and with the Mets, it's through 2035, which brings us to another name that I was not expecting to see on the list.
Yes?
Brett Saberhagen.
Let's go.
Brett Saberhagen is going to make $250,000 from the Mets through 2028. D.D. Gregorius is going to make $2 million a year from the Phillies through 2026. Mark Melanson is going to make $1 million per year through 2028 from San Francisco. Matt Holliday, whose son is now playing in the major leagues, he's one of the Jackson Three, $1.5 million from the Cardinals through 2029. Our guy Waino, who was on the show, $1 million from the Cardinals through 2033.
Damn. At least that one makes a little more sense. Matt Holliday had like a couple good years.
Wait, give it. How many years will we'll be sitting here going, hey, you know, Shohei Ohtani is still getting money.
Well, we won't be here, but his money will be here.
That will have made sense.
Yeah, seriously, I'll be in a box and he'll still be getting paid.
What about locally? I'm glad you asked that question, voice in Lawrence's head.
How many years did Matt Holliday have where he was like considered a world beater? How many? Like four? Okay, I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on that because that's amazing. Good
Jason
job,
Hayward is going to be owed another $500,000 from the Cubs through 2027 through 2027.
So they let the air out of that balloon because I thought there was only one more year on that thing.
And over on the South side, Liam Hendricks is going to make $1.5 million of deferred money through 2033. Jose Abreu, $1 million through 2026.
And that's not counting what he's getting paid in Houston?
Right.
Wow.
Lorenzo Cain, Low Cain, is going to make $1 million through 2027.
Guess how old I'll be when Shohei Ohtani is in his last year of getting paid on this current deal.
You'll be 65, right? It's a 10-year deal, isn't it?
Good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, I'll be 74.
Good Lord.
Bryce Harper, what year does his new contract run through?
Well, he's not on this list, but you know who is on this list? Vinny Castilla is going to make...
Vinny Castilla from Oaxaca!
Is going to make $107,000 a year through 2029. Zach Greinke is still owed $12.5 million per by Houston through 2026.
Yeah.
Ryan Braun.
Right.
Ryan bleeping Braun.
Cheater.
Yes. Owed $1.8 million per year through 2031.
All right.
Hold on. There's one more. Max Scherzer.
Oh, yeah. That one's, yeah.
$15 million a year through 2027 from the Washington Nationals.
Damn.
Oh, wait. One more. There's
not
one
done?
More. There's two more good ones. Okay. Both of them Red Sox.
This is wild.
Manny Ramirez is going to make $2 million through 2026. Dustin Pedroia is going to make $2.5 million through 2028.
Now, for all the criticism that Manny Ramirez has received in his career, the fact that he still is making over $2.5 million a year, he showed everybody.
Man, I still think Brett Saberhagen is the winner.
That's the winner.
That's the randomest one of all. Vinny Castillo.
But Brett Saberhagen no hit the White Sox in 1985.
He hasn't played since 2001.
Do you remember when early ESPN SportsCenter graphics couldn't fit his name on the graphic? It was like WCBD, and now like all the words were super close together because they didn't fit. Those were the days.
That's unreal. Man.
And it was Chris Davis with a C, not the other Chris Davis. Not the other Chris Davis who hit 247 4 years in a row.
That Chris Davis contract with a C is...
We've got High Noon coming up next. All I have to say this, I'm just going to give you a number. 24.
I have found a portal to the underworld that is in Denver.
We did it! An incredible viewing experience that I was not expecting.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
Time for your Wednesday High Noon. This is the marking point of your work week, and it's all downhill for you from here. We started out by talking about what I thought was a nicely turned episode of Hard Knocks, appropriately football-y. It brought us home, tying up some of the loose ends from some of the storylines, and I thought the last two were much better than the other episodes we'd seen. We also talked about all the angles of the Velus Jones story, him making the team, all of the time that was spent sort of puffing him up, Ryan Poles leaning into his attachment to him, and the fact that a team wanted to trade for him and they wouldn't do it. We're still reasonably uncertain about the Justin Steele injury and waiting for more despite the multiple efforts to allay our fears. Mike Florio was great as always, and Cubs math, not great. It's
time. So I went to go visit my parents on Sunday and had a wonderful time. My dad was watching the Biography Channel, which he likes to do, and there was something on Patton, which is part of my childhood. Not Patton, but learning about Patton. So I go into the kitchen. My mom made breakfast, and I was just flipping around channels. I was like, oh, you see what's going on. Rocky III is on. I watched Rocky III with my mom. She had never watched any of the Rocky movies, and her commentary was hilarious. First thing was like, I can't believe I let you watch some of this stuff when you were that age. But she pointed out the things that we have talked about specifically in the running scene on the beach. She said, first, who is that beautiful man? And I said, well, that's Carl Weathers. He plays Apollo Creed. And then she said, he's not moving his head when he runs, but Sylvester Stallone seems to be moving his head a lot when he's running.
And his jowls are flapping around.
So I explained to her that Carl Weathers was an NFL player, and that if we were to watch it again, you would realize how hard he's trying to make it look like there's an actual race going on between these two dudes. So she was like kind of into it. And then we got to Rocky IV, and I wasn't sure if I wanted her to see the beginnings of Rocky IV because of what happens to the earlier reference beautiful man that she was watching. Mm-hmm. Then she said that if she were Apollo's wife, that she wouldn't want any of the handshaking that was offered by Brigitte Nielsen, that she wouldn't want any of that stuff. We can't be friends. And she said, I'm going to find someone to beat her up because she's too tall.
She is tall.
She doesn't even know how enjoyable that was for me to watch the Rocky movies with her. It was awesome. to get her perspective on it.
What's next? Like, what's next on the movie list?
The Creed movies. I explained
to
her.
You're not going
to
finish out a bunch of other Rocky movies?
I don't know if she needs to. I told her she doesn't need to see Rocky V at all.
Or Rocky Balboa.
I actually think Rocky Balboa is a good piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, but she doesn't. It doesn't. In the canon, it's not necessary for her to move on.
I think we can jump all the way to Creed. So I think that's what we're going to do. We're going to watch the Creed movies at some point.
All right. This is for everybody who thinks that there's something nefarious or at least fishy going on at the Denver airport. And let's face it, if you know about the Denver airport,
I'm one of those people, Layla Rahimi. Yep.
I, too, am one of those people. Don't try to fool me with that music that's all pleasant on the train. The door is closing. To hell? I just need to know. So, naturally, when I saw the headline, an ancient portal to the underworld was found in Denver, I thought it was the airport.
It's not?
No! There's another ancient portal to the underworld that was found in Denver and returned. It is an item. And it was stolen by looters, because looters do that stupid stuff. It was originally stolen sometime in the early 20th century, and it was considered a portal to the underworld depicting the Olmec Jaguar God, and I can't say the name of the Jaguar God.
Why?
A bunch
Does he appear?
Letters. No, just because it's a bunch of letters. Oh, okay.
It's Mark Brunel.
If there were a Jaguar God, who would it be?
The Olmec Jaguar.
Probably
Tony
be
Buscelli.
Mark Brunel.
Tony Buscelli.
Keenan McCardell?
Ooh, that's a good choice.
Tony Buscelli.
Former Bear.
Yep.
That's a good question. All right, so different underworld and different Jaguar God. I was returned to its Mexican home in May of 2023, but here's where the looters were real jerks. They broke the object into smaller pieces. So Mexican authorities with the government's National Institute of Anthropology and History have spent a year trying to restore the statue. What happens? What happens when you restore the statue to this portal to the underworld that magically ended up in Denver that was gone for 2,700 years?
Yeah, nothing good probably, right?
Like, you just think it just ended up in Denver on its own.
I think once you restore the Olmec Jaguar God statue, the White Sox are able to return to glory.
Now, apparently,
but with an evil bargain.
This Olmec Jaguar God had flaring eyes and a gaping mouth.
Olmec Jaguar God was. Oh, sorry.
But the artifact was a 6-foot by 5-foot cave mask. It was one of those things. And how did you transport it? How did it end up in Denver? How did it break up into pieces? Did somebody go to the underworld and use the thing?
These questions and more will be answered on In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
I feel like I'm on Legends of the Hidden Temple. The Nickelodeon game show. No, there's so many unanswered questions here. We can't just peace out of High Noon after that.
But we have to because of this thing.
I have to mention, we're at 24. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland.
We were at 23. Nope.
The doomsday clock?
A man from Calumet Park was arrested Friday night for having a firearm inside his car when it was parked where? At the Naperville Top Golf parking lot out there by the I-88 corridor.
That's right.
That is
where the Bears should build their stadium.
He was 24 years old, and it is the 24th time a suspect has been charged with a firearm-related offense there.
Shout out to Kobe.
Since August of 2023, DeMonte G. Dennis was arrested at 9:15 p.m. on a charge of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, a Class 4 felony. And a misdemeanor charge for possession of cannabis. And once again, you know exactly what it was. Here once again is Naperville Police Commander Rick Krakow, who says officers were performing a proactive foot patrol of the lot.
They're looking for your guns.
Detected an odor of cannabis from the area around a parked Buick. The vehicle was unoccupied, but when officers looked through its windows, they observed a handgun in plain view.
Oh, my God.
What do you guys do? What? Why wouldn't you just put it in your trunk?
Take the magazine out, put it in its...
Somebody's likely, you could also just break into a car and steal stuff.
Just put your guns away. This is what they do. They walk around and they look in your windows.
They're looking.
They're looking for your guns. And they
crime.
Find... Crime.
crime.
Why are people leaving anything of value just on your seat in your car while you're gone? Why are people still doing that?
It's what you do at the Topgolf. And apparently, as I've always said, stupid criminals love pretend golf. And potato skins, I guess.
Or empty parking lots.
Something. So for some reason, all of these absent-minded criminals just have a thing for, like, video game driving ranges. They love it.
That is High Noon. We do it every day around this time. When we come back, Alex Brown is going to talk Bears with you. Bears.
Huh. From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.